oh my. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, what it do?
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Turn Two podcast. We are here on a beautiful Wednesday with not as good a news as we hoped to bring you. The lockout is still on. It was right at the one-inch line, everybody. The one-inch line. But nonetheless, the show must go on. I am your host, Matt Williams. You can find me on Twitter at MATTWI77IMS. And today we're going to be talking all about bullpens, and I couldn't have better guests lined up for you to talk about that. First, lining up on my immediate side here, if you're watching live on YouTube, over at The Athletic, along with me, Mr. Greg Jewett. Greg, you've been on the show before. Welcome back. How are you feeling about the lockout right now, buddy?
Well, I'm bummed. I mean, I'm happy I work for The Athletic, but you know, as you and Doug know, I tried to launch my own little side venture focusing on relievers, so I couldn't have picked a better year to take it out on my own. Oops.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of get into that. Reliever Recon, really like one of the coolest things going. Again, like I said, I got like two of the best guests that you can have for this topic. But if you want to tell the audience right now a little bit about that, because sometimes the shows go long and I forget to plug stuff. So now we're going to do it at the beginning to make sure we get that out of the way. So yeah, tell everyone about the Reliever Recon, where they could find it and where they could sign up.
People have been using my closer charts for years. We incorporated that into the site. And I have four great other guys working with me. And obviously, you know, we've got Doug here on the show as well. And I love everything that he does and the BBHQ crew does. So Reliever Recon is basically just, you know, we're focusing on clover, but not just closers. We're focusing on all the high leverage guys. The bullpen guru, he does a great job. He'll be doing daily stream articles. So if you're in head-to-head leagues or you need daily fill-ins, he focuses on the guys on like the Rays and everybody else that comes in and it's like the first guy out of the bullpen or projected to be that gets those vulture wins. We have Aaron Pags and Nate Markham doing a weekly podcast. And, you know, and we have two-time FSWA, well, he won awards in both things with Eric Samulski manning up our editing and doing a lot of our video stuff that'll be coming out whenever there's stuff to talk about.
All right. So, yeah, everyone go check that out. You'll see the reason why if you're not familiar with Greg, shame on you. You'll learn the reason why you should be following Greg and Doug as the show goes on. And we haven't actually got to him officially yet. Joining us as our second guest, Sir Doug Dennis, the bullpen writer over at Baseball HQ. Again, one of the best in the business at what he does. Mm-hmm. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So right now we're going to talk again. Spoiler alert, if you haven't learned yet, we're talking all about bullpens, saves, relief pitching, how you're going to attack that in your league, what, you know, draft and holds, redraft, points leagues, whatever, saves plus holds, what, you know, everything that we can get to here. So there's a lot of different topics and I'm certain we're going to go down a few different rabbit holes. So let's kind of get started. This year, for anyone who hasn't been in a draft yet, if you're like obsessed with fantasy baseball like me, you've been drafting since October. But in certain high stakes leagues kind of started this trend, closers have been going very early. In the early drafts are typically draft and hold, which for anyone not familiar with them, not a typical redraft league. In these ones, you draft 50 rounds of players. There is no waiver. So you have to get your saves or you're not picking them up off of waiver wires. But we've seen closers consistently going in the second, third, fourth, fifth round. Sometimes all of the big guys are gone by like the sixth or seventh. I've seen them go in the first round. So starting with you, Greg, how do you feel about the cost of elite closers right now? Do you think that they're worth the investment, especially if your draft is going that way? Or would you feel more comfortable staying and just going later and investing in another position?
All right. Well, there's so many avenues on this. First and foremost, and it's hard to do, but you're trying to read the room because not every draft is going to be the same. And when I'm running, I ran the numbers for February in DC's. There was 57 drafts. The min on Josh Hader was seventh overall. Seventh. Now, you know, I understand what Josh Hader provides, and he you know, he's one of the few relievers that will give you a chance at triple digit strikeouts, protect your ratios. He's the guy in Milwaukee. But if you're taking him seventh, and you're taking him over Ronald Acuna Jr. or, you know, somebody else of that nature. I mean, in TGFBI, Gerrit Cole fell to me at 10, which I was surprised about, but I don't think that'll happen to many main events, but it's, you know, that's where we are with that. So it's hard, but people need to put this in context. The draft and hold, as you covered on the intro, is you have no in-season pickup. So, and we'll talk about this a little further down the road here, but you've seen in the last two expert leagues that do have free agency acquisition is that the rooms haven't been as crazy. And I think some of the market will stabilize as people start to reset all these things, but the draft and hold context really drives those prices up. Basically, the top six you're referring to goes through about Ryan Presley. Those guys are usually gone in that format by the first 60 picks.
All right, Doug, kind of what are your thoughts on this too? Again, there's different strategies for obviously redraft and draft and hold. And who do you consider the top tier? Greg was just saying it kind of ends at Ryan Presley as their sixth. Do you believe that there's only six? There's Hader, Hendricks, Diaz, Class A, Iglesias, Presley, and...
No, that's
you,
six.
That's six. Would you,
that's six.
Would you include... Would Don't you include, be seven. Would you include a Chapman? Would you include anyone else? A Jansen, who will probably, wherever he signs, be a closer. Would you add anyone to that list, or do you think it's at six?
Oh, I think it's probably – you can draw a line after six and then say Chapman is after that and Romano's after that for me. I don't really – I mean, Jansen probably will close. I don't really think he's very good. I mean, good, but not like that. Not like in my first three rounds or something good.
Well, I guess there's a difference, right? I mean, the elite group, and then I guess there's the group of people that you are 100% certain are going to be closing games to start the season, because even that number, elite or non, even if you want to include the Will Smiths and Mark Melanson, that number, you know, kind of dwindles off really quickly as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it's all about comfort level, right? Like if you're drafting and you're like, I nail every part of the draft but closers, then you're pushing them up, getting the guy that you think is going to let you sleep at night. If you're comfortable fabbing, messing around, and you know, every week with who's my second closer this week, which is where I usually find myself. I won't say I'm comfortable with it, but I don't. It doesn't bother me the way it bothers some people. I mean, I'm not trying to win the overall or something, so maybe that's the difference.
I gotcha. And here's a question for both of you that kind of ties into to both methods for draft and hold and redraft. Draft and hold, they're being pushed up a lot because you just need saves in general. The better pitchers are obviously going in order because they offer something in addition. But for both any format, do you think getting where you're chasing saves, again, this isn't saves plus hold, this is saves only league. Do you think that it's worth chasing after the top options to get that boost in ratios and strikeouts? Like I've seen arguments both ways. I personally love, I think that does give you a nice boost and it does give you a nice, you know, kind of comfort level, but I'll draft middle relievers too, that are really good to do that later. Well, we'll get to that, but in terms of just driving closers for saves, do you think it's worth the investment for those top guys we talked about for the ratio and strikeout boost? Or do you think that is slightly overrated? Greg, first to you.
Well, I get it. You know, Doug and I are in pretty much lockstep with this. It starts with comfort. Now, if you want to say, I'm going to get an anchor, which means one guy that I think will give me 30 saves, I think you can do that in your first six rounds, say, I'm going to do that. But if you're taking two closers in the early rounds, you're going to find yourself chasing stolen bases and a lot of other counting categories that will get scarce when you're talking about as this thing progresses. You know, Doug and I focus on relievers, and we both recognize this. I still felt like I waited on closers in TGFBI, and I still felt like I was chasing stolen bases. It's tough out there. So have a plan. And then you, again, you really, really have to read the room. There's been a trend in the draft and holds, at least. After Hader and Hendricks are going to go where they're going to go. They're going early. So you either you're paying it or you're not. It's like a binary decision. I'm either getting one of those guys or I'm not. Basically, once Iglesias goes and then Clase goes, then you start to see the dominoes fall. So now you're playing the, am I in the right place if I'm going to get my anchor based on the room, or do I want to start that cycle of events, or do I risk missing out on it? And I lost out on it on the TGFBI. I got Jordan Romano, what I felt like was below ADP, and I'm okay with that. But then, of course, if Jansen decides he goes to Toronto, then I'm swinging in the wind.
That was a really good follow-up on just the question of investing in an early closer. I was more asking the, is it worth investing in the top tier for just the ratio and strikeout boost? Let's say that you are completely comfortable. Jordan Romano, Mark Melanson, some of the later guys that are just inferior pitchers are getting those saves. Let's just call the save totals. You are guaranteed the save totals are equal. So I'll swing it to Doug here, since same kind of question though. If you knew the save totals were going to be around the same, do you think it is worth the bump up just to get the quality pitcher for the amount of innings they're going to give you?
Not when you consider that you could get an elite starter in the second or third round. I mean, I'd rather have a starter giving me those ratios than someone who's pitching 70 innings. So I don't really, I know people are doing that but I don't think it's because of the ratios. I think it's because they want the guarantee that the guy's going to be the closer all year, because the ratios you can get with elite starters better.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to jump the gun here, because eventually when the season does, when the CBA does get signed, there'll be more and more jobs secure, and it'll be interesting to see how the market shifts. Obviously, we already know that draft and hold, you still are going to want to get your saves a little earlier because you can't get them after the season starts. But after some jobs are secure, it'll still be interesting in redraft to see if how far the market will pull back. I think we all think it will. There'll be more options. People will not go back there. But I would think top tier guys will still be going decently early. I know a couple of the, Greg was saying, a couple of the industry leagues like Tout and Labor, some of their redraft ones, they were going a little late, especially the, I think the Tout mix just went, I don't think Hader went till the fourth round. I would think in maybe NFBC leagues, I would still anticipate those guys to go a little earlier. So it'll be interesting to see how everyone reacts to that. So speaking of we already talked about getting your anchor. So, and then you can try to find late value. Do you feel like you want to get at least one decent option for like redraft leagues, Greg, when we're talking about saves? Because, and we're talking about like any of those guys where you just get grabbing someone, one guy you think has a job. But if there's a run early, do you feel like you still have to grab one of those? Are you comfortable? Because again, you have really good charts. You have really good guys you like to speculate on. Are you comfortable enough to just grab a couple of flyers and go late? Or would you like one of those like surefire guys?
Well, I would prefer to have one surefire guy. I just want somebody I know that's in the role. I mean, now again, I would rather have somebody like Romano with more upside to him than I would Melanson. But that's apples and oranges. Once I have that anchor, then I have options. So now my second closer, I can speculate on a guy I think has really good skills with upside and protects my ratios. So I don't have to take a whip killer like Gregory Soto. And that gives me room to play. And then what I've also found through research in the NFBC stuff from the last four seasons is the rounds 11 through 20 is where people take most of their shots, and it's the lowest hit rate. You actually almost have a better chance of getting your anchor, taking your speculative guy, and then waiting until, the 21st round and on, and then take your flyers and then add guys through free agency acquisition. I mean, it's the volume of people taking closers between rounds 11 and 20, because everyone's like, oh, I'm not going to pay for save. So everyone's in those rounds just tossing darts all over the place. And then they're on the train, and it's, the Reds proved it to us last year where they said, we don't have a closer, and nobody believed them, and people were drafting Warren. And I think I think the Reds had the most money spent in Fab last year in the main event, people chasing the Reds relievers, and they're always chasing the saves that happened last week, not the saves that are coming down the pike the week ahead.
So the that's definitely a good way to go, Doug. Same kind of question. How, if you are looking to get one of those kind of anchors, he was mentioning, you know, to try to get someone not a whip killer again or not, or kills you everywhere. And Gregory Soto, where's the late options that you like the maybe undervalued assets that, who's like maybe your last line of defense? Who's the last couple of people you feel comfortable with being like your closer one? If you wanted to walk away with at least one guy and you didn't get one of the early ones, like, yeah, who's a couple of the guys you're looking at right now to take right there?
I really like the range where Romano and Gallegos and Corey Knebel, that's really where I've been living, and I like it there because I'm able to get the things I need in the earlier rounds, but I'm not getting Soto or, you know, Tyler Wells or whoever, you know, late. So that's kind of where I've been. I like it there. I think that those guys are reasonably, you know, they have good ratios. They have good skills. So if they have the role, I don't see them giving it up the way that I do some of these other guys. So I like that area. I think that's the sweet spot.
I really love Romano. I know the question marks. We know that the Blue Jays have shown a willingness to not give him the job whenever possible. They kind of gave it to him by default, but yeah, if he has the job, he's terrific. And honestly, if they don't sign Kenley Jansen, they don't trade for Craig Kimbrel, it's pretty much his job. So I like him. The Cardinals, it's interesting with Gallegos is, you know, the Cardinals beat writers have all come out and openly said he's not going to be the closer, but we know he's obviously their best option. We don't know how that'll shake out, but Greg, who was your last guy in those tiers? Because I kind of threw this out earlier. Taylor Rogers is a very interesting guy. Again, another person that could easily be traded. There's already been rumors for him being traded as well. So there is a danger there. But do you think, are you much happier to shop in that Gallegos aisle? Let's just say he fell to a comfortable area. Would you rather go there or still maybe go another direction and wait for Taylor Rogers? Or do you think that other tier is that much further up? Because I think for me, Rogers would be the last guy where if I grabbed him as my closer one, I'd feel okay. I mean, I probably would want to grab another guy sooner than later that I felt okay with. But I think that's maybe as late as I'd want to go where before I got super set.
Yeah, I understand what your assertion is. From a skills perspective, I really like Taylor Rogers. I mean, he's got a great K to BB. He had some bad luck last year, not good numbers against righties, but the year before he did. You know, first we want to know if that finger's okay. I mean, we don't have any reports because we don't know if he's been throwing or what's been happening because of all this crazy lockout stuff. But I would be a little bit more comfortable with Knebel just because I think the Phillies have to use him as presently constructed. And we're going to say that probably 1,000 times here during this, but as presently constructed, we would think Knebel's going to get the clearest pathway to saves in that Phillies bullpen. And we know Girardi would prefer to have one guy back there to rely on. I would prefer Rogers as a second closer in my build simply because at best he'll probably give me 20 saves and then the Twins are going to flip him. So I'm saying, you know, his 90% of his season would be if he gets to that ratio. And then if he gets traded somewhere like the Mets or whoever else, I know the Mets were in on him before the trade deadline. If that's where he goes, he's not going to be the closer. And now I have to move on. So if I'm taking Rogers, then I'm thinking, all right, do I take Duffy? Am I taking Alcala? Who am I backing him up with? So I'm not just drafting Rogers. I'm drafting somebody else. So that's part of the thing we have to also think about. However I'm doing my build, the allure of getting Hader or Hendricks is I'm taking one guy. I don't have to worry about other parts. When I'm taking these guys in the speculative ranges, now I'm giving up two to sometimes three roster spots to try and canvas that bullpen. And that's the hardest part when we're doing these builds. And the things you have to think about is all of these things are happening.
Yeah, having to allocate extra resources, especially in draft and holds, if you miss out, you have to spend that many picks trying to speculate because, again, you can't go back to the well. In redraft or draft and hold, Doug, we were talking about Taylor Rogers, where if you got him, there's a question he gets traded. Maybe you want to get Jorge Alcala as well. How do you feel about, like, handcuffing closers. Again, you could talk about this from a, this is probably something more you want to look at in a draft and hold, but even in, if you have a deep enough bench in redraft, how do you feel about it? Like Garrett Whitlock, he looks like he's certainly the best guy for the job. They currently have 6 starting pitchers in Boston. Not necessarily all great. There's injury risks. There's talk of Garrett Whitlock and coming to the rotation. They told him to come to spring training if that ever occurs, looking to be a starter. But if you get Whitlock, do you definitely get Barnes? If you like Lucas Sims, are you trying to get Art Warren? Is that something you believe in doing? Or do you think that is like not a very good way to allocate funds? Because if one guy doesn't give you saves, then it's a wasted pick. How do you feel on that?
Well, in a draft and hold, you get 50 picks. So, you know, late, just go for it. I mean, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't do that. I don't hate that strategy. I like it better when I'm only picking between like 2 guys instead of like San Diego, where there might be like 8 guys or something, you know. But I mean, if you have the picks and, you know, nobody else is taking them, you know, get those guys who have good skills, because typically those guys rise to the top anyway. It's funny. I really hate Joe Barlow. Maybe we'll talk about him later. I hate him. And so what I did
not the person. We have nothing.
Yeah, he's a really nice. He seems like a really nice kid. But
he may be terrific guy. I mean, I just hate it. I don't want him on my team.
I wanted you to say no. I hate him. He's terrible.
No, I don't hate Joe Barlow. I don't know him, but you know, if he does really well, then I'll hate him because I've been panning him everywhere. But it's really so what I did is I said, well, who on the Rangers, you know, and I get him like in the 600s or something, you know, who's second and third for the Rangers. Maybe I'll get lucky. So yeah, I like that. I don't hate that.
We'll get into awful closers in a second. Before we move on from this, especially you said in draft and holds, there's like 1 million picks. It's easy to do Sims and Warren. Warren goes late. It's good. It's easy to do Rogers and Ocala. Ocala goes decently late. Whitlock and Barnes, or if you want to go with some of those, that's a little more expensive. How do you feel about the handcuffing, Greg, as far as those? Do you have a favorite pair you like to do? Do you not believe in doing it? What are your thoughts in general on that?
I love a skill set standpoint. I love Sims and Warren. I don't like how the Reds deploy their bullpen. And I'm sure Doug can back this up. I mean, last year it was just a constant stream of who's going to lead them in saves this month. And the guy who had the most saves in any month last year was Heath Hembree for the Reds. Heath Hembree. He had 7 in July. All right, so who had Heath Hembree on their roster when all those saves were coming down the pipeline? Lucas Sims had a terrific end of the season when he came back from the injuries list, and they were giving saves to Michael Givens and Michael Lorenzen. They did everything they could not to use Sims in save situations. I mean, if you want to trust that Reds bullpen deployment, God bless you. I really like Lucas Sims, and I love what Art Warren flashed last year when he was pitching. We can do all this and then they'll use Luis Sessa. I mean, we don't know what they're going to do. So if I'm doing this, I'm not touching the Mariners. I'm not touching the Reds just based on, how they do this. I mean, both of those teams just missed tying a major league record with relievers with 5 or more saves in a season. If they had one more do it, they would have matched the mark since 1969. I mean, they're just volatile messes. So if you're going to handcuff, try and make sure you can identify a clear 1 or 2 and go from there. And again, that's the allure of that. And this is what's driving the price up in draft and hold is you're saving roster spots and you're getting your guy and you ride off into the sunset and just hope he doesn't get hurt.
Let me give you an aside on Heath Hembree real quick is he went from closer to cut overnight. I mean, they didn't even demote him. They just cut him. I mean, that's how much the Reds care about who's closing.
It's just fungible to them.
Although, I mean, there was, they did try to give the job to, can't even think of his name right now, Amir Garrett.
Amir Garrett.
Yeah, they tried to, then he got injured. So, I mean, it's theoretical that if anyone was going to do it, I would say Lucas Sims. So I'm okay with taking him. When I take him, I absolutely would pair him with Warren or something. It depends though on cost. If, you know, I'm not reaching, it depends on where they go.
it could pay off, but here's the thing. So when I did Lucas Sims player profile, I took the Reds leaders by saves per month and I put them all together. So if he led the Reds in saves every month last year without being hurt or whatever, he would have had 23 saves. So I mean that's the ceiling. So it's okay. Just enter with eyes wide open. If you know, I don't think anyone's taking Sims and saying, I'm getting 30 saves here. You're saying I'm getting elite ratios. And if he carries over everything he did and stays healthy, then I can get 20 saves with good strikeouts and ratios. And just make sure you're setting a realistic baseline when you start getting into this range of guys. Could Sims outperform a bunch of guys picked ahead of him? Absolutely. But we're just trusting the Reds to let him do that. Could they change face this year? Yes, but Raisel Iglesias asked to be traded from this team because they wanted him to pitch in any inning, and he was like, no, thank you.
He knows what's up. He got his money. For anyone keeping score at home, this, in case you haven't guessed it, it does pay off to get a closer early. You just have to pay for it, unless you want to take several shots late, but we're going to get into some of those deep shots now. We're going to get into bad pitchers or bad pitchers that, you know, have a path to saves and whether it's not drafting them. But before, let's talk at someone like this is really in between. Someone who's been very successful at closing games for his entire career, not necessarily very good, in Mark Melancon. You made the case of Lucas Sims maybe not getting as many saves being on the Reds last year. The Diamondbacks are obviously historically terrible. I have them down to probably be the most improved team in baseball because they can still be the worst team in baseball and still improve the most in baseball. That's how bad they were. They led the league, I believe, in losing one-run games. So in theory, there's possibly a lot on the table for Melancon. You can certainly lead this league in saves being on a terrible team. I call it the Chad Cordero rule back when he was closing for the Nationals. They'd win all their games, but the only games they'd win, they win by one run. So he is going just after the safety tier in the very beginning. And depending on the format, like, you know, they have the Blake Trinans who don't technically have a job. I mean, that people are hoping will, and there's going ahead of like Knebel. So how do you guys feel about Melancon? Cause he's in that weird, like purgatory area between useful and not useful. Is he, if he gets traded, you don't know if he's going to sit, get close games or not. So just Mark Melancon himself, because there's been a big conversation there. So Doug, what are your thoughts on Captain Boring, Mark Melancon?
Well, I'll just start with probably what I would have started with last year, although it's worse now, is projected strikeout percent minus walk percent is 14, which I think is pretty lousy for a reliever. And if I look on my sheet for where people are going in the ADPs, he's the only one below 20 for, Jake McGee's a few after that. But then you go, I mean, there just aren't many guys going. I mean, he's the highest reliever who kind of stinks, who is, you know, and by ADP. So I don't really trust guys like that. I think, he's definitely the name guy. Put it in pen. By May 1st, he could be 5.5 ERA gone. I mean, I don't trust it. So I'm more scared of guys like him than I am of guys who don't have a role but have good skills. You know, like a Taylor Rogers is not, you know, the guy, but I can trust his skills. So I'm more on guys like him than I am on guys like Melancon.
And I'm on board with you. I mean, the one thing Melancon has going for him, going to Greg now, is he's not good, but he has a job. He's the worst pitcher that currently is guaranteed a job, because even the Barlows aren't guaranteed a job. Either of those teams can easily name someone else. But I think everyone, even people that don't like him, can admit that he's the closer. So it's just whether, and that's the question now. We can get move beyond Melancon. I want to get your thoughts on him, Greg. But the question is, who are likely closers? Again, Melancon is probably a definite closer. Who are not worth rostering because of the damage they can cause in ratios or low strikeouts or something like that. I call this the Carlos Estevez question, because I think most people are on board with the fact that he's probably going to be the closer. He's not even being drafted in redraft leagues. He's barely going. He's going very, very late in draft and hold. So even though the saves are on the board, people are avoiding him. So Mark Melancon's basically a Superman version of Carlos Estevez. So anyway, I say rambling on there, your thoughts on Melancon and, drafting closers who are probably getting saves that are crappy.
Yeah. Well, again, this is what we're trying to avoid. And if I took anybody in a Rockies bullpen, it would probably be Robert Stevenson. But again, that's just a late round dart. And I'm betting on the skills he showed, and the Rockies didn't even let him throw like his best pitch most of the time last year, which just shows you how terrific their analytical department is. If you guys need some help out there, Doug and I are able to work, but the shark fooled me last year, and I'll let him win that round, but I'm not going to buy him a year later for what he did in the season prior. Just, you know, it's almost like the Colome effect, because I was a little nervous about Colome. I said last year, I'm going to get off him a year too early instead of a year too late. And I think Melanson might be in that same boat. The underlying numbers he's insulated by his present role, but the underlying numbers indicate that, you know, his guts and guile and ground balls might eventually catch up with him. Again, he could start out hot. And if he did, if you're in a league with trades, I would trade him ASAP. He did take a 2-year deal. So I don't know if Arizona will necessarily flip him or not, but we'd have to see how all that plays out. That bullpen is really, I mean, Noe Ramirez is like the eighth inning setup guy. So, I mean, there's no immediate threat. So, you know, I love JB Bukauskas last year, but, you know, injuries and being a rookie caught up with him. Maybe down the road in a year or two, he'd be ready, but I don't think it's this year. So that's what's keeping Melanson where he is, not the skills area. And as far as those guys you were saying, you know, the risk, I mean, again, the nice thing about when you're taking one of those guys as a third closer, it's a binary thing. If he starts out with a job and he's terrible, I just cut him and I move on. If he doesn't get the job out of spring, that makes my decision even earlier. But there's going to be 3 to 4 guys, the veterans with closer experience. There's going to be an Ian Kennedy that gets a spot to get saved somewhere, Boxberger, guys of this nature that people are not taking anywhere because they don't have a role. But once this lockout ends and that the free agency opens up, that this is where the soft part of the market's going to explode.
Don't you feel like Melanson is going to have times where he gets up and starts throwing and then has to sit back down more than like any other reliever?
Well, especially with
how bad the
because of the group getting to him. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Someone asked me on Twitter earlier today, who's going to be the closer for Washington, Pittsburgh, and Texas? And my answer was Ian Kennedy. Well, I mean, jokingly, obviously, I just said all three. Ian Kennedy, he's gonna lead all teams in saves. He'll just get traded 3 times.
That'd be fine. I just took him in like the 24th round.
I like David Bednar, though. I mean, I do like him, but it was in general. I'm going to go through some teams, guys, and tell me if the closer on the team, the perceived closer, is even the first reliever you'd want to draft on that team. Let's start with Gregory Soto. If you're in a point of draft where you did need saves, would you draft Gregory Soto or would you draft Michael Fulmer? Start with you, Doug.
Pass. No, I mean, I would get Soto, but I would hold my nose and wonder why I got to this point in the draft this way.
I would prefer Soto too. We got to get that walk rate down to 13% or lower.
Royals. I mean, obviously, if you need a guy there, you're taking Scott Barlow. But just to stop here, do you think that he is worth? Do you think if you had to bet, do you think he is definitely where would you put your percentage chance, Greg, on Barlow being the closer for the Royals come the All-Star break?
The All-Star break?
Yep.
35. I don't trust Matheny. He last year before everybody got hurt, he gives people roles. He's like, Doug, you've got the 7th inning against this team. Matt, you've got the 8th inning against this team. And Barlow, you've got the 9th. And then we play another team the next week, and he's going to say, Matt, you got the 9th. Doug, you got the 8th. Barlow, you got the 7th. I mean, they did this all season long. They didn't commit to Barlow until September when he was like the only guy standing and Stallmont was coming back with COVID. You know, everyone's forgetting Stallmont had more saves than Barlow at the beginning of the year last year before he went out injured. I mean, everyone's anointing Barlow because he ended the year as the closer, but I don't trust Matheny. And he's another one, just like the Reds and the other teams we quoted. I don't trust Matheny. I won't take any shares of Scott Barlow because of Matheny. It has nothing to do with Barlow or whatever. So it's like every year we pick the closer from the Royals. Last year, people were drafting Greg Holland, but we were saying, oh, take Barlow. So now this year it's going to be Stoneman or Dylan Coleman who'll end up getting the saves. And we're like, why the hell didn't we take those guys?
Cool if they had a Stalma and a Colmont. I should have actually phrased the question, who would you rather, you know, who would you end up with more shares of if you were drafting teams? Because, yeah, there's obviously a preferred option here on these teams for a reason. Doug, how about Oakland? Again, it looks like Lou Trevino, probably the guy, not getting drafted highly at all. Apparently no one has a lot of confidence levels, but when you hear anyone talking, there's no other names basically because there's no one else on the team. They have shown in the past that they are not willing to really go from the same guy year to year. They're breaking this thing down. I don't know if they're trading Trevino. Let's say they don't. How confident are you in Trevino being a useful fantasy asset for, you know, more in a couple months?
Well, I love Lou Trevino because I had him in draft and hold in the 49th round last year, and it worked out a little bit for me. But I got to tell you, I would rather punt saves than draft Lou Trevino or any other person on Oakland A's roster right now. Maybe they'll get a guy, but for now, I don't want any of their relievers. And in fact, I would rather go without any relievers before I picked one.
How about you, Greg? Are you anti-Trevino? Are you punting before you draft Lou Trevino?
Probably. This is another one where, like, he throws his best pitch less often. His changeup is usually his best offering, and he used it less last year than he normally did in the past. That's what fueled his 2018 breakout. If I took any dart in this one, it would be a walk-off pick on AJ Puck, and I would hope to get 10 to 15 saves with him.
All right. We're going to skip Seattle and San Diego. Just no. I mean, we can talk about him a little bit, but I mean, what's the point? Tampa Bay, Kittredge. They use a billion people. They did trade away Diego Castillo. They mean the pretty much his primary threat isn't as much as it would be in previous years. They still have a ton of guys in the bullpen, but other than Peter Fairbanks, Kittredge actually seems like sneakily not as bad of a pick as a Royals closer as I think that people think he is. I mean, I don't have any shares, so this is kind of a hypocritical statement on my own part. But Doug, what do you think of the Tampa Bay bullpen? Because I understand the skepticism and they skip around. They have a history of doing it, but there's not too many options there. It's not as convoluted as many bullpens, actually. I mean, in my opinion.
I've actually been jumping. I don't have any Kittredge, but I've wanted him, and I've been getting Fairbanks. I really like both of those guys, and they're not going to get you the 30 saves or any of that, but they are going to give you good ratios. They're going to give you some wins. They're going to have weeks where they just are the guy for a while. I mean, if you plotted Tampa last year, they had stretches where one guy was getting saves for maybe 6 weeks at a time. If you can hit that sweet spot and get four of those six for, you know, that's great. I mean, I'm not getting them to be my main closer or anything like that, but I don't hate where they're going. And I actually think there's hidden value in guys like Kittredge because of the ADP.
What are your thoughts, Greg? Because it's interesting spot because they're a very good team and there's only a couple of options. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things where you can invest in this bullpen and get a decent amount of profit out of it. And I, for some reason, it's being ignored just because the, you know, that stigma that Tampa Bay has.
Well, I think they're being ignored because they've had, is it 27 relievers have recorded a save since 2020? I mean, that's what resonates with everybody. And it leaves, you know, like last year, they actually used Diego Castillo as kind of a de facto closer. And then they traded him after he got, I think, 12 or 14 saves. And they're like, okay, thanks, Diego, because he was entering his arbitration years, which I will remind you, Kittredge is at about that same precipice. So you could almost see an exact carbon copy. They might use Kittredge right off of the bat and then decide they're going to move him for another player
with
options, and they're going to keep the thing churning. So if you're taking him for 10 to 12 saves and good ratios, then perfect. Then he's very good and he helps you with those things. I think Seawall's the same kind of a boat. He's not going to be the closer, but he might end up being the most valuable guy in that bullpen because he can do like a Chad Green thing where he gets you vulture wins, gets you double-digit saves, and gives you strikeout totals. I mean, those things do matter, especially the deeper the league. You're in a 15-team league. Guys like Seawald and Kittredge and these guys take on more value from the things you talked about from the intro.
Yeah. All right. Continuing on the crappy closers. Dylan, I always call him crappy. A guy that probably will not be closing for very long, but again, currently is the consensus closer, Dylan Flora over on Miami. Not a great situation. Pretty much I don't think Anthony Bass is any longer a legitimate threat. Anthony Bender is sitting there. I would think that they're a strong candidate to probably acquire somebody. But starting with you on this one, Greg, Dylan Flora, someone who's going very late, who currently has a job. And I think the only thing keeping his ADP down is the fact that most people assume he's going to be replaced. What do you think about that?
I agree with most of those people. That's as simple as I can put it. They're either going to trade or sign a second-tier reliever. Yeah,
so just no interest at all just because you're so confident in that?
A source told me the team prefers him in the eighth inning role.
All right. I mean, I'm fine with me. I mean, I'm avoiding him because I assume that is the case. What do you think, Doug?
I think the Marlins are primed to pick somebody up that from, you know, when we talk about like guys like Ian Kennedy, that's exactly the kind of team I think about when I think about a team getting him. I think if they don't get anybody, it's going to be Bender. But one of the weird things about guys like Floro is if they happen to start the season with what they have, they could do something weird and just go, well, let's see how it goes for a week. And then, you know, pretty soon it's like mid, you know, it's like Cesar Valdez. We talked about him all the beginning of last year. I hated Cesar Valdez, but he led April in saves. And then you can cut him. I mean, that could work. That could happen. I mean, it's not impossible, but God knows it's not going to be on my team.
And the last bad closer we'll talk about is whoever the heck closes for the Nationals. Certainly, there's certainly plenty of upside to how a couple of their options could go. They certainly haven't shown it yet. Finnegan, Rainey are the two guys right now. Are either of you interested in either of them? Is this a bullpen for as low cost as it is to get them in drafts that you're even taking a stab at, or is this an avoid for you? Do you have another guy outside of those two that you're taking a shot on? Because who knows what the Nationals are going to do here, but I mean, I would assume one of those two is going to end up soaking up most of these saves.
It's a small sample size, but in 2020, Rainey was terrific. I mean, he had a very good K minus BB. Now we don't know if the spider tack had anything to do with that. He was injured for most of last season. So if he comes out in the spring and the velocity's up and his slider looks sharp, then I'll be happy to buy into him. He has swing and miss stuff and Kyle Finnegan doesn't. So for me, that would be the gun to my head thing, I would go, I'm team Rainey.
Yeah. I think Rainey and Bender both have been pushed up the last few weeks by buyers because they're actually viable options that are not the first option. So they're not super expensive, but they look like they're the best reliever in those pens. I just paid three. I mean, it's an auction NL only labor. I just spent $3 on Rainey. So I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm. I have a few shares of him as well. So I'm glad to hear that. So now that we've kind of gone through some of the bad options, let's talk about the people that just flat on aren't closing right now and aren't expected to in the immediate future. Who are some of the players that you guys are targeting that you feel can be, again, we're not talking about speculative because I think there's more than enough information. You guys talk about it a lot of people do. So we're actually not even going to discuss that really. But you know, we can get into a couple of these guys you name have a path to some saves, but let's just talk about just good middle relievers that you think you can draft just to play as they are. They can get some wins, especially the way bullpens are going. Look at a guy like Jonathan Loaisiga. You know, you can get some wins, you can get some saves. So who are some of your favorite guys that you are targeting that you think that people should be aware of? Like, you know, everyone knows Devin Williams is very good. He's going to need a trade to get there. He'll be top five closer if that happens. There's constantly rumors. So, you know, he's an obvious example. But beyond that, Greg, we'll start with you. Who's I guess name one of your top options. We'll just kind of work our way through because there's quite a few. We've talked about a few. Like I said, I like Art Warren. We know Jorge Alcala. There's a lot of decent. Well, Alcala is not maybe not one of the truly elite guys you can start without saves. But yeah, who are you starting middle reliever that currently does not even have a job?
Well, you stole mine on the intro, Matt. I was going to talk about Loaisiga because if you read my submission to The Athletic where it's asked for a sleeper pitcher, I put him in there. Here's the thing, after I think it was from June on last year, Aroldis Chapman started the year on fire. I mean, he was getting everybody out. He had the body language. He was posing after strikeouts. He had it all going on. After June, from June 1st forward, he threw strikes less than 60% of the time. His walk rate spiked a little bit. And now from August on, he kind of recovered a little bit and his numbers don't look nearly as bad, but his whip was bloated last year and he had a walk rate about the same as Gregory Soto. I mean, I don't know that Aroldis Chapman is 100% healthy. I don't know if his command is going to return this year. What I do like about Loaisiga is if he can stay healthy, and I really think the Yankees need to put him on a pattern like they did with Chapman with one inning outings and no 3 days in a row and things of that nature. They need to protect this young arm because it's talented. His swing strike percentage spiked near the end of the year. His last 19 appearances, he had 2 wins, 3 saves, and a 0.79 ERA with 23 strikeouts and a 1.79 batting average against. Those are things we love. And I know Doug loves this, 23 strikeouts versus 6 walks in that time frame. I mean, we have a kid that's coming in. He gave up 4 hits last year on his curveball. All singles. Okay, so we know what he can do, and we saw the velocity gains in there, and he's on a team that's going to have starting pitchers that don't go long, which means relievers are going to get decisions. That's why him and Chad Green are so valuable for fantasy, and I also think the Mets guys are going to be sleeper in this regards too. Seth Lugo and Trevor May are both going to be sneaky for vulture wins, ancillary saves, and helping you with those ratio stats. So those are a couple of under the radar situations. I don't want to call them under the radar, but I think people are overlooking the value of Trevor May and Seth Lugo. We all kind of know about Green, and I think Loaisiga has taken that step this year.
I love stacking guys like these in draft and hold. Some people are doing, some people like innings and innings are everything. I would much rather not roll with a mediocre pitcher. I will just roll out these relievers. I'll roll out a couple of them. Mm-hmm. Last year I won Tower Wars draft and hold. I had Chad Green and Loaisiga on my team. I drafted them both. Chapman, especially last year. I mean, remember that one game? He looked like Rick Ankiel. He looked like he lost it. Like, period. It looked like he had lost it. He ended the season a lot better, but man, I can't. I know everyone who defends Chapman, they're saying like it's the Yankees. They like going to their one guy. They're going to go back to Chapman, and I agree with that. But man, the Yankees are loaded. We talked about Loaisiga. You talked about Chad Green. There's Clay Holmes. There could be like multiple injuries, and they have so many closer candidates where that kind of worries me with Chapman, where he could have like a phantom IL stint. Like, are you feeling well? Put him on the IL. We have plenty of other options, and there's like a lot of guys on here. Clay Holmes is obviously a pure draft and hold pick. You're not going to be touching him in any redraft league. But yeah, I love Loaisiga. Trevor May, same thing. I agree with you there. Doug, do you have any guys that are your favorites of any middle relievers that we haven't really talked about during the show? Because there are a lot of really good arms to start that aren't being talked about.
Well, I think you named the main ones that I really like, including Sewald, and I think including Devin Williams. I mean, Devin Williams is incredible. I think he'll get a lot of wins too. I like Brent Suter. He got a lot of wins last year. He's lefty. I think he has a shot at getting some, value for you. I don't think he's ever going to get any saves, but I think he has value. I actually like some of the Dodgers relievers that are not very highly heralded. I like Phil Bickford quite a bit. He has really great ratios. I don't think anybody's on him at all. If you're in a draft and hold, you can wait all day and get him. I think Vesia is another guy they have that I really like. And I actually, they got sneaky got ex-Yankee Tommy Conley, and I actually really like him. If he shows that he's healthy, he could be closing. I mean, it sounds crazy, you know, because they got Trinan and everything, but it's not like it's impossible to see a path for him to close. So there are so many really highly skilled relievers hanging out in middle relief on teams that, you know, who have proven themselves over time, that in the right situation or with the right, you know, things happening, you could see them closing in 6 weeks into the season, which if the season keeps getting shorter, that's not very long. So that's mm-hmm. a factor. But yeah.
I love the guys you brought up from the Dodgers. Cause again, theme of the show, everyone, we prefer, all three of us prefer to draft pitchers that are good. Even without a job, in hopes that they find one. We're talking about guys on teams that have like a decent options in front of them that are really deep. I mean, you talked about Vesia and Bickford on the Dodgers, where most people, you know, obviously Trinan is the first guy. We didn't even talk about Daniel Hudson, who could, you know, I mean, he's been away, but he's easily good enough to do it. Gratterall hasn't proven his, you know, hasn't really shown his full potential yet, but he certainly could be around the corner from doing that any moment. And you brought up, we talked about Josh Hader and Devin Williams. You just brought up Brett Suter. They have Jake Cousins on that team. He struck out 44 guys in 30 innings. He's solid, too. He could certainly close games. So some very talented guys there. One guy that I brought up, and because I've heard this guy talked about a whole bunch, I want to get your guys' thoughts on him, because you talked about how you don't feel very strongly about investing in the Reds' bullpen. I really like Art Warren, but again, I don't necessarily need saves from him, especially where I'm getting him in drafts. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a path there where you can get them. Do you guys have an opinion on him? Because he's a guy who's going, like, I think way too late. Not, I mean, some of the guys we're talking about aren't even on the radar, so those were great guys to bring up. But Art Warren, I think he's very solid.
Oh, come on. A recon, we call him the Art of War. I mean, he was in my...
Well, I don't want to give away any data behind...
Oh, no, that's okay.
I want you to do that.
No, he was in my first, I've done two, what I called Fortune 500 articles, where it was guys with a ADP of 500 or higher that can end up with five or more saves. And he was on the initial list. He's definitely somebody you can keep an eye on. You know, here's another one for you. You didn't talk about bad bullpens. I mean, you know, Doug and I were just talking about how we liked Cody Hewer the other day, and now he just had Tommy John surgery. I mean, this stuff changes on a dime. So now it's like, if people, I think Rowan Wick's ADP is going to go up because people are like, oh, well, Hewer's gone, so now I can get Wick. No, you want the next guy up. So now you're thinking about Scott Efros, or you're thinking about, and I know Doug's talked about him in the past, is if they ever decide to put Braylon Marquez in the bullpen, there's your next closer for the Cubs. I mean, it might take till the second half or maybe even next year, but I don't know if he's got the DNA to be a starting pitcher, but that guy can hit triple digits on a gun, and he's a big lefty. So, you know, again, keep all of your options open. But yes, I am on board with you. I love the skill set of Art Warren. I just want to see it over the full season. He's got to stay healthy.
Talk about an interesting name here. Rob DiPietro, the dead pull hitter. Everyone, if you don't know him, he won the NFBC overall 2020 draft champions. He came out and he just said, I'm sick of people giving bold statements that aren't really bold. And he said, here's a bold one. Hector Neris will be named the Astros closer on opening day. I don't know how serious he is, but I've talked to him and I'm pretty sure he does think this. And this isn't throwing shade at Rob. Rob's really good. I want to just talk about Hector Neris, because we're talking about pitchers that can be useful out of the closer's role. He's drafting him really late, as anyone is, because he thinks that there's a path to saves. But Hector Neris is certainly someone you can look into drafting even without them. He, as a Mets fan, I'm kind of sad to see him leave the division. I mean, he doesn't really have the, I don't know, makeup to be in those big situations, but he did strike out almost 100 batters, mm-hmm. and I like that a lot. Him being in a slightly lower leverage situation, I think I might like a little bit. So let's talk about Hector Neris. What are your thoughts, his chances of leading, being named the closer without an injury, and then your thoughts on him otherwise? Starting with you, Doug.
That's a very bold prediction. I love Rob. He's obviously knows what he's doing, but come on, man. Like, no, I don't think so. I mean, they got Ryan Presley, but You know, here's the thing with Neris. Neris has a great strikeout guy. He's got great strikeout to walks. Those are my favorite. I mean, they're so basic, but it's so important, right? And the only thing about Neris is he hits a rut where he gives up a bunch of home runs, and then the Phillies give up on him. And I mean, he's still our best reliever. I mean, you know, I never really understand how his usage when he was with Philly. So I think he'll be used a lot better in Houston than he was with Philly. And I really do like him a lot. But closer over Ryan Pressly, I start to say, like, what, like, why? Why would they do that? Because he does still give up home runs.
I love Rob. Either he's got something going on or information on Pressly. Maybe we don't, but
yeah. By the way, what happens? I will say that I love Rob. He is very sharp. If that happens, I'm not going to give him his credit as much as I'm going to demand his source, because he obviously knows something.
Yeah. He's behind the scenes somewhere, seeing MRIs or something. But here I did publish this on the site about Neris in the end of the season notes here. Among all NL relievers, he ranked third in strikeouts, third in games, and 10th in strikeout percentage at 31.6%. In 73 of his 74 appearances, you know, you can cherry pick stuff, of course. He had a 2.93 ERA, and then he had that awful 6 earned run game in 2/3 of an inning against the Padres. You know, so that kind of skews a lot of it. From July 26th till the end of the season, he had a 1.83 ERA his last 34.1 innings, which ranked 9th among all pitchers with at least 30 innings pitched. So, I mean, he finished the year well once they kind of took him out of the – I don't know if it was just a closer role or the situation in Philadelphia or whatever, but he's going to a better analytical team. They're going to say, hey, we love what you do with the splitter. Throw the sinker more, get more ground balls, cut that fly ball rate down that Doug was and you were referencing, and just let it rip. And I think he will thrive there. So if you draft Pressly, he's a wonderful handcuff. I mean, this is a situation where if you're taking two pitchers, that's a nice 1-2 in a draft and hold.
It reminds me last year of Karinchak and Classic, honestly. Yeah. I mean, that it reminds me of that. Absolutely.
Yeah, perfect. You're investing in someone. Well, I mean, Karinchak was kind of questionable just because of he has a downside. But yeah, Pressly, I mean, if you can get an elite option, especially in a draft and hole, if you get Diaz, get Trevor May. If you have Pressly, mm-hmm. You can use these guys in weeks, even if they're not closing games. To end the show here, let's go to a couple of confusing bullpens, leaving the two most confusing for last. First, let's talk about the Giants. Very early in the draft season, Camilo Duvall was actually being drafted very early, like really early. People have come back a little bit on that. I've actually seen Jake McGee getting drafted ahead of him on a couple of occasions. Tyler Rogers is incredible, doesn't strike guys out. We'll get a few saves, but obviously is not really in the hunt for the actual closer position. Doug, what do you think here? Do you think that the Giants will... I mean, McGee had the job. It got taken away from him because he was injured. They gave it to Duvall. He ended the season really well and in the postseason. Do you think it's his job as a lefty? Do you think they just give it back to McGee? Do you think these guys split? What are your thoughts here in the Giants? How would you attack it if you were going to invest here?
I really, really wish that we had spring training to watch these guys, because a lot of times, I mean, we have so much data on Jake McGee. He has had a lot of spring trainings where he just spits the bit and looks terrible. And then by the end of April, you know, he's back to being good and it's too late. So last year that didn't happen and he got the role and I thought he was very good in it. And I think that would be their intent. I think if they could give the role to McGee, they would. But if McGee is playing terrible and we don't get to see it, we may, you know, not know that.
Greg, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I from a dynasty perspective, I very much like Duvall. The one thing that worries me about Duvall is, and I ignored this last year when I analyzed Karinchak, and it was my mistake, is I overlooked Karinchak's walk rates in the minors. And you can't do that with Duvall because they're very similar to Karinchak. So we saw what happened. Now the good thing is Duvall did pitch last year under the, you know, the new rules with the checks, and his command was better. I just want to see it for a full season before I'm going to pay full retail. So right now I will probably, depending on where, what happens in my draft room, if I was going to take a chance at saves in there, I would probably take whichever one was going later. And you're saying you've seen McGee starting to move up a little bit, but he's generally still going around 250 or later in most. Oh no, really?
Definitely. He's going much, much later. I've seen McGee go ahead of Duvall and some people obviously have strong feelings. It's mm-hmm. not.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. No, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, there's always going to be somebody that's going to take their guy and that's fine. But yeah. And again, we can't forget Kapler has changed gears in season before. You know, last year he was consistent, but that doesn't mean it's going to be his MO going forward.
So let's talk about the Padres and the Mariners. We're going to do it, everybody. All right, the Padres last year. Pagan was named the closer by the media. Never got a save. I believe he literally had zero, which is
he did. Yeah, that's a big goose egg.
It's very impressive to be the anointed the closer, and then of course zero, not really, you know, not injured, really. So this year, roster resource believes Pierce Johnson is going to be the closer. NFBC thinks Robert Suarez is going to be the closer. If we're going by what the Padres did last year and went with a guy with the most experience, Emilio Pagan possibly is going to be the closer. If they're going to go to another direction, maybe Denilson Lamet with his elbow and his arm, they're going to maybe try to make him into a closer. And of course, Luis Garcia, when he got moved over there, there was people that thought he may be the closer. So for anyone counting, that's everyone in the bullpen has a chance to be the closer other than Craig Stamen. What are you guys doing? Honestly, I can say I have, and I've done many draft and holds. I have a share of Pierce Johnson, Luis Garcia, Emilio Pagan, and Robert Suarez. I have a share of all four. The only guy I don't have a share of is Lamet, basically.
And it's funny because Dennis Lim on The Athletic talked about Pomeranz.
Oh, and Pomeranz. Forgot about Pomeranz.
Who can never stay healthy.
Yeah.
I don't think the saves leader's on this team right now. That's basically my opinion.
Pick one guy out of these eight. No, I'm going with nine.
Pick out of those guys? No, all right, then I'll take a...
I was just joking with you. I said pick out of these eight. He said, no, it's none of these. Well, the problem is you can't... It's hard to speculate here because we just named a bunch of pitchers that were good enough to start when they're not closing. It's none of these guys, really. What do you think, Doug? I mean...
I've thrown two darts. I threw one at Lamet late in a draft and hold, and I threw one at Austin Adams, honestly, because I like his strikeouts to walks.
Yeah,
and he likes all those hit by pitches don't count against his whip.
He likes to throw inside. I love the throwing inside. I do.
Seattle, we can talk about last year because they're far more interesting because. They're like a better version of the San Diego Pen in the sense that there's a few people here that could perform well enough to actually contribute to their team and not be giving saves. Seawald, we already talked about. Diego Castillo, we know his situation. He's very good. Ken Giles, we know he can be at his peak. He has his flaws, but they traded for him when he was injured in order to have this role. We know Andres Munoz, it seems like we've been waiting for him for a very long time. And again, roster resource disagrees with everyone has put Drew Steckenrider back in the role, which he's the only guy I'm not actually interested in of any of the ones we've talked about. Doug, what are your thoughts here on Seattle? Because I actually have less shares of these guys, even though they're all kind of it's a better bullpen altogether, because I literally have no way to handicap this at all. And they're all going a little earlier than the Padres guys. So bless us with your knowledge, because I don't know what the heck to do here, man.
Well, again, I really wish I could watch Ken Giles, because I think that seeing him be healthy would give me some comfort that he probably will be the closer. But I want to see it. I don't want to just take it on faith that he's just going to come in and be like he was before he got hurt. Absent seeing him, I'm all over Seawald. I just love that guy. I thought he was fantastic last year. I think he's going to be fantastic again. I don't think he's the closer, but I think he can still have a year just like last year and get, you know, good number of saves and maybe some wins. And obviously he's good, but I want to see Giles. I don't want to just take him on blind faith.
He's like a little Seawald. They're the Seattle Loizaga, a guy that can help you across the board regardless. So mm-hmm. I agree with you there that he certainly seems like the safest guy to draft. In general, do you agree with that, Greg, or do you like someone else here?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is either dynasty or at the end game of a draft and hold, I wouldn't mind throwing a dart at Andres Munoz.
Yeah.
All right. That if you're going by stuff, again, we need this kid to stay healthy, but he could be electric. I mean, he could end up being the livest arm in that bullpen, and we just haven't seen him yet. So they can slow bake him. They can keep him in the sixth inning at the beginning of the year and then let him go up. And the one nice thing about Seattle is if you do play in a league that does solds, this is gold. I mean, you can take any of those guys and they're just going to rack up saves or holds and just, you know, and pad your ratios and let you go forward. So Steckenrider, I think, is only in there because he had the most saves coming down the stretch, but that was just, again, they see it as fungible. Like a lot of other, the Mariners have patterned their bullpen just like the Rays. They're copying that exact thing and trying to adopt it into their own little niche up there.
If anyone knows the meme of the dragon heads, there's two really mean looking ones and then one with like kind of a goofy looking face with the tongue hanging out. That's Steckenrider. So to end the show, have we not talked? Is there anyone, an interesting guy in the bullpen that we've not talked about that you think is interesting? You want to let the audience know. And who is the person that you've drafted the most? Again, I've done a ton of draft and holds, but I have a ton of Loaisiga shares. We talked about him earlier, so we don't have to review. I just took him in the tout draft and hold, so I don't have to like keep it a secret or anything. So yeah, I officially have probably that's the last draft that I'll be doing for a little bit since the seeding season is on hold. So starting with you, Doug, to finish out the show, is there anyone that you have in your back pocket we haven't talked about yet? And who is the reliever that you've been most interested in trying to target so far?
I'll do the second question first. I've had Corey Knebel in every league so far that I've been in because I just think he's going in the sweet spot from an ADP standpoint or from a price standpoint. And then the guy in my back pocket that we have – see, here's the thing is that the haven't talked about, I don't know. I guess I'd say this. I really think that Trevor Rosenthal, if he's healthy, is going to close for somebody, and we haven't talked about him. That's all.
No, I love that. I'm glad you brought him up because I could have put him in the notes because – a lot of people were burned by him. We don't know how he is. That's another guy we really could have used someone to sign him and put him on display in spring training. Who'd you just bring up for? Knebel. I want to say I don't have many shares, and it's not because I'm not trying. He's in that weird, like you said, he's in that sweet spot where I think I outsmart myself. I'm looking. I'm like, all right, I think I can wait another round, and then he'll go. Where like you always have the opportunity to take him at a good price, but you look at his ADP and you're like, all right, I think I can wait another round. So yeah, you can get a really good price on him, but it's really a matter of league to league. You just, it's like hot potato, man. You just don't know when he's going to go, but you can always get a decent price. How about you, Craig?
If you're in my league, he's going to go and it's my pick, I guess. Cause that's happened every time.
Yeah. If I'm going to league with you, Doug, I'm just going to take him right before you to be like, ha ha.
You've noted, yes. I keep getting these old, boring, I referenced them earlier, veterans with closer experience. So I've gotten some shares of Kennedy, who I talked about, Brad Boxberger, Ryan Tepera. I just think these are guys that can end up going to a team and just finding their way into the ninth inning, even if it's a one-year deal and they're going to flip them during the season. What I would love is for Tampa Bay to shock the world. They tried to get Craig Kimbrel at the trade deadline and they just missed out on him. I would love to see Kimbrel end up in Tampa Bay and just blow all of our minds and they go use one guy and he gets a bunch of saves. But
in the end game, blows my mind anymore, by the way, when they got Nelson Cruz, that blew my mind. And now they've offered money to Freddie Freeman. I don't even know what the Rays are anymore.
Yeah, who are you anymore? But yeah, that would just be something fun. But getting those guys near the end has been something that, you know, Tepera has been linked to a couple of different teams. Heck, he can end up back in Chicago. Doug touched on it earlier. Miami would be a terrific landing spot for Ian Kennedy because he's a fly ball pitcher. That's why Texas did well for him. When he went to Philadelphia, he struggled because that's a hitter's park. So, you know, you want these guys going to a good spot. And, you know, you talked about the Boston thing. I didn't really get to talk about them, but I almost feel like that might be where Jansen ends up.
That would be good. I mean, they obviously don't trust Barnes anymore. They Hawk and Whitlock, they probably would like to do something else with, either use them as firemen or in the rotation. So yeah, mm-hmm. I like that a bit. And all those guys you mentioned, the boring veterans, is why you can't draft guys like Floro with confidence, because any of the million names you throw out there could close over Floro, and mm-hmm. it could be any of them. So yeah, that'll do it for the Turn 2 podcast. Hopefully you got some good names out of this, because it depends from league to league. Like we said, I go back to the beginning of the show in draft, and again, in draft and whole leagues, you have to be a little more aggressive. But again, the theme of the show has been draft good pitchers. Overall, even if you don't get the saves, which aren't guaranteed, especially with a lot of these situations that aren't settled, at least you're getting a good pitcher with ratios and strikeouts, and you can always move on in waiver leagues. So that's kind of like, you know, the general theme of the show. So to end everything officially, starting with Doug, remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter, any upcoming projects you have, where they can find your work, any words of wisdom you want to leave everyone with.
Yeah, so you can get me on Twitter at DougDennis41, which you're looking at the screen, you can see. I'm at Baseball HQ. I write a weekly column on bullpen, surprisingly, I know. And other than that, I'm just out and about. You can see me at First Pitch Arizona if you can come down this fall. That'd be fun.
All right. Greg, we touched on a little bit earlier, but before we give him a refresher, let them know where they can find you on social media and where they can find all your work.
All right. At GJEWETT9 on the Twitter machine. And, I do, once we have some semblance of a framework for baseball, I usually do a weekly column on The Athletic covering closers. And then I do all the other content behind the reliever recon stuff. So again, if you've used my closer charts in the past, I thank you. But this year, at the prompting of all the guys working with me, we decided to put that behind there. So for $3 a month, you can get those daily updates on the closer charts in season, and add that to your arsenal if you're on the saves chasing machine. But thanks for having us on, Matt. I appreciate it. Always great talking with you, Doug. And you know, I was blessed to be able to meet him at First Pitch this year and be on a panel with him talking relievers way back then. So it's good stuff. Always fun.
Always fun. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks to both of you for coming on. Everyone, again, follow me on Twitter, MATTWI77IMS. DMs are always open. If you have any questions about anything we talk about, I always go in on my weekly column on NBC Sports Edge by the numbers. I go into and I try to teach people to research players, do their own breakdowns like I do on Twitter to learn different advanced statistics. If you have any questions about them and you want to shout them out to the public, DM me. I'm very happy to show you how you can do your own research, what things mean, how they can impact your fantasy team. Always reach out. Always love talking baseball, even now when it's a little bit of a bummer. So thank you for listening to the Turn 2 podcast. We'll be back next week with a special guest, Ron Chandler, where we'll be going well into a lot of those advanced statistics I was just alluding to. So hopefully by then we have a CBA. Fingers crossed, everybody. See you.
My, oh my. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn 2 in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn 2 in every way, so I turn to you 2 today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn 2. Turn 2, what it do? Win leagues. Catch out.